Let's just talk about the whole issue of whether or not we should be listening to the scientists who are telling us we need to go into Tier 1, Tier 2 and Tier 3, possibly even a circuit breaker lockdown, as it's been called. But this is all based on the advice of sage scientists. Their minutes were released after the Prime Minister earlier this week announced that we were going to be moving into different tiers. Obviously, within days, many parts of the country moving from Tier 1 to Tier 2, from Tier 2 to Tier 3, rather makes a nonsense of the exercise. But there is some talk that even by next Friday, we could be looking at what is laughably called a circuit breaker, national lockdown, but would actually be another full lockdown. Yeah, you can go to school and go to work in large parts of the country, but it wouldn't necessarily break any circuit. Well, let's talk to a man we've spoken to a number of times before about whether or not actually the advice we're getting on the science is actually good advice that we should trust. Mike Eden joins me again. He's a former chief scientific advisor with Pfizer and joins us now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Julia.
Good morning. Nice. Now, you spent over 30 years leading new medicines research, in particular in the issue in the area of respiratory disease. We've spoken to you a number of times before, false positive rates and the like, many other issues. But you've just written a piece for Lockdown Skeptics website suggesting there is another key issue, a couple of key issues, with the advice that SAGE, the advisory group of medics and scientists giving advice to the government, and you say they are committing a major error in terms of their assumptions. What is that assumption that you think is wrong, which therefore means that all the policy suggestions they are making are also wrong?
Yes, thank you very much, Julia. Yes, it's with some trepidation that I wrote that item, and it's out this morning, and anyone can find it and just look at two pie charts. As you'll probably know, the speed of travel of an infectious agent in a population depends on what percentage of the population remains susceptible. If you were immune to start with, or you've been infected and are now immune, then it doesn't travel amongst the members. Now, I couldn't believe it when Boris gave his speech, I think it was on Monday, and within 10 minutes, SAGE's advice to ministers, I think it was dated late September, appeared on the internet. And I remember idly reading it, and if everybody would like to go to the effectiveness of non-pharmaceutical interventions, NPIs, the second paragraph. I read it and I read it again, and I'm still on the looking glass side of the world. They said, since 90% of the population are still susceptible, ... I believe that SAGE went into 2020 with a complete lack of awareness that about a third of us carry immunity to SARS-CoV-2 because we've been exposed to closely related coronaviruses that cause common colds. Everybody who's deeply immersed in this area knows that it seems SAGE does not. So that's the first error. They thought we went in because it's a new virus with no immunity, and that's wrong. And at first I thought, well, it'll come out the wash. Then next, they've been tracking people's exposure by looking at how many people have got antibodies, which seems reasonable. The problem is that only the people who got sickest have antibodies that stay up that you can measure later.
Well, I had this with my family. I tested positive for antibodies let me finish. But the rest of my family, some of them tested, some of them didn't. And those who were not very sick at all didn't test positive for antibodies. So the assumption from SAGE is that those people are still susceptible to the disease.
Yes, that's the thing, and they're wrong. Unfortunately, people who are exposed slightly and have definitely been infected, they may not make much antibodies or none at all, but they definitely have converted their T cells, have remembered they've been exposed to the virus, and we can measure it in their blood. It's a clunky technique, but it's definitely true that people have been exposed to the virus or been exposed to common cold coronaviruses that are similar and are no longer susceptible. So my big claim is that SAGE thinks that 93% of the British population are susceptible to the virus. No wonder they're panicking and they think there's going to be a massive second wave. I'm afraid I think the science says that only 28% are susceptible. And if I'm right, the pandemic should be largely coming to a close with some secondary ripples in the regions, that London should not be ablaze with coronavirus. There were nearly 1,000 deaths a day at this time in April, and now we think it's 10. So if my predictions are correct, London should not see a big secondary wave, and it's not. If I am correct, there'll only be outbreaks in the regions, that's what's happening. If I am correct, the rises that we are seeing, northwest, northeast, would be rising much more slowly than in the spring because there are fewer people and it's harder for the virus to move between them.
And when you say the regions, Mike,
I think it's over.
Mike, when you say the regions, you know, that's millions and millions of people. We're not a London-centric show, but you're basically...
Yes, I know. I'm a southeast guy.
No, okay.
I apologise. I'm actually born in Birmingham, but I've lived in the southeast. Yeah.
Mike, okay. So the key point here is that London, the reason why it won't be happening so much in London is because there was much more exposure before the first lockdown in London, and therefore a large part of the country which has not been mostly exposed, they're not having a second wave, they're having a first wave. But hold on a minute.
Yes.
There'll be lots of people saying, well, hold on a minute. We saw what happened in that first wave. We saw how many people died. We don't want our first wave either. Why are you so convinced then that there will be that level of immunity in parts of the country which didn't have a lot of deaths early on? For instance, let's look at Devon and Cornwall. They've never had any wave at all, not having one now, didn't have one then. Does that mean that they've still got much higher susceptibility?
I don't know. I think it's likely, but I think it'd be fair to say I don't know. They didn't get a large amount of illness and deaths the first time, Julie, you're right. Now, it's possible that the reason is that they had a higher level of prior immunity. And it's possible the northwest and northeast will be hit harder than some other areas of the country. But there's nothing, I don't think there's anything I could do about that. Let's say we were able to make a measurement. I mean, you might say, well, let's lock down. If you do want to do that, you should only do it in a targeted area. It would be absolutely crazy. I think it's crazy closing a big city like London down. I've been looking and waiting for weeks, expecting it not to come up in London and hoping to God I was right. And it's not coming up in London. And I'll tell you what, there's one, you know, I've been talking earlier in the year about false positives and so on.
Yeah.
It's definitely, the virus definitely swept through the country and all countries in Europe earlier in the year, and lots of people died. But something really strange has happened that I think the pandemic is substantially over. I do think there'll be, as I say, this secondary ripple. As people, I'm afraid, catch it and get ill, and some will die in the places further from London that weren't so exposed. But we've detected that there's some very odd things going on in terms of false positives. They're pushing the assay all the time to beyond any sensible limit. There's exaggeration, there's kind of cheating, there's bad practice. Did you know, for example, that when people go to hospital as a COVID admission, you'd think that would be someone with some symptoms that turned up and was tested, and oh, look, they've got it. But in fact, if they only get a positive test after 10 days in hospital, that is classed as a COVID admission. It's an absurdity.
Why are they doing that?
You have to work that out.
Yeah, the professor of evidence-based medicine at Oxford University, I know you're in contact with him, Carl Hennigan, their latest estimates are that when you actually look at the date at which people go into hospital and the date they're tested, 17.5% of hospital COVID patients, they believe, caught the virus in the hospital. And again, we're also talking about people dying of COVID and with COVID. We know that there is no excess mortality right now. We also know that we have seen very much fewer deaths. I mean, a huge number, tens of thousands of deaths that we would normally have expected from things like pneumonia, from things like flu, that we've not, heart disease and others this year. And we've not seen that because those deaths have gone down as COVID deaths. And they may well be people who had COVID, but and they were tested positive for it, or they just, you know, they actually had it themselves. But a lot of those people, very sadly, were very near the end of their life already, would probably have died very tragically from those other diseases within a matter of weeks or months anyway. And yet they're counted as COVID deaths. And there's lots of evidence now, isn't there, that actually this year, overall, when you count all deaths, may not be an exceptional year for deaths at all.
No, I was quite surprised to look at this. I think lots of people would think, well, it's been just a horrific year. Obviously, it was you or your relatives that it is horrible. But it's only, believe it or not, in terms of excess mortality, this year is ranks 8th out of 27. So it's about like in the top third of bad years over the last 30 years or so. It's not that extreme. And it's for the reasons that you say, Julie. Yes, there are these, quote, COVID deaths with or off, but there are lots of people, lots of deaths we would have expected due to a variety of common causes, oddly enough, had just not happened. And of course, I think they have perished of those causes, and they just happen to have been found to have had this virus. So I say again, it's a massive claim that I think the pandemic is fundamentally over in this country. And the only reason it's not that we're not being told it's over is because Sage has decided it's not over. If you look around you in London, people know people are not ill.
Yeah.
The hospitals are not full of COVID people. It's not in the southeast, not in the southwest, not in the centre of England, not in the east of England. And honestly, I genuinely believe they may have, for whatever reason, just predicted certain things that haven't happened, and now they're kind of like doubled down. But when you go and look at it, it is pretty much over. It will crest in the northeast and northwest like it's done everywhere else in Europe. The secondary waves are always smaller in terms of ill people and lethality, and then it will go away. And stand up and tell them, you know, let's examine this evidence, see if Eden's crazy or not. And
but I this think is it. Let's, again, look at the evidence. Don't look at who's saying it. Look at the evidence. But the fact that you're a former chief scientific advisor at Pfizer, I mean, I'm sorry. I think that's people developing the pharmaceuticals to deal with these sort of diseases. I think it's worth listening to you. Mike Eden, really appreciate you joining us. Always do. Former chief scientific advisor with Pfizer.